Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today, we have Jermaine Johnson, who is running for the State House of Representatives in District 52. Hi, Jermaine. Welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
Can you talk us through where are you actually running?
It's a little wonky. I've been telling people that I'm probably going to go down in history as the guy who represented the most districts in South Carolina history. So back in 2000, I was elected to the House in District 80. Due to redistricting, my district was actually combined based on the census numbers and the loss of population. It was combined with District 70. District 80 was actually moved to Mount Pleasant. I was put into a primary with Representative Wendy Brawley. I won that primary and went on to become the representative of House District 70, which encompassed all of Lower Richland. Due to a court settlement with the NAACP and the AEC and the state, that the lines were redrawn again for this election cycle that's going on now. And the lines were split back up. So District 70 will now encompass half of Lower Richland, Eastover, Hopkins, Gadsden, and Camden. And District 52 will now have Elgin and also half of Lower Richland. With this redrawing, I have now been placed into House District 52, currently represented by Representative Ben Connell. Myself and Representative Ben Connell had a conversation, and he notified me that he would not be seeking reelection, which allowed me to run unopposed in this election cycle.
Let's jump right in. And obviously, you've been a legislator for a while now, but I think it's important that people know what prepared you to become a state legislator. So could you talk a little bit about what you've been up to before you started representing us?
I do a lot of talks across the state, talking to young people about my history, my past, and how I got to where I am today. I am 38 years old. I will be 39 this year. But my upbringing was very tumultuous. I come from an era where there was a lot of drugs and gangs. Most of my upbringing was spent living in motels and hotels. I traveled around living all over the place. I lived in friends' houses. I went to 7 different high schools, and I was able to have an AAU coach that really believed in me. And my AAU basketball coach, he actually sent me to a prep school in upstate New York. That is where I figured out that life didn't have to be like the way I was experiencing it. I was one of the top basketball players in the country, and I was able to get a scholarship to play basketball at the College of Charleston. I ended up graduating. I got drafted to go play basketball in the NBA D League. I went from there and played professional basketball for 6 years. I played in Brazil, Canada, Portugal, and Mexico. When I came home, I retired in 2015, and I was getting involved with community issues, and I started a nonprofit where I wanted to make sure that young people didn't have to experience the type of upbringing that I did. I was helping out some people in my area down here in Lower Richland. When I was talking to people, I was hearing a lot of things like the same issues that were going on. I went to a community event. Was about bridging the gap between police officers and the community. I had just talked to a young person a few days prior who said he had been stopped 3 times in 3 days. He was searched and they didn't give him a ticket or anything. They let him go. At this event, the police officers were talking about how good they were with community policing and all these different things. And it kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I had just talked to this young person. I spoke to them about this and I got a standing ovation. As I was leaving this event, I got a tap on my shoulder. And I turned around and the guy was like, listen, man, you are exactly what we need in politics. You're a young leader and you're essentially the future of what we have in this community. That person was Representative Joe Neal, and he was the very first elected official that I had ever met. That kind of started on my road in politics.
So you've now represented a couple different districts, but let's focus on District 52, which you're running for. What do you think the district's biggest issue is?
And District 52 is very similar to District 80 that I first represented. And it's a multitude of issues because we have rural, urban, and suburban in this district. We've got black, white, we've got Republican, Democrat, everything in between. But this is more of the type of district that I like to represent in terms of having just a diverse population of people. And in my area, we have a lot of issues with overdevelopment that is going on down here. We have issues that are concerned about being able to pay certain bills with medication. A lot of the issues that I hear about is, of course, just roads, potholes, and those types of things that we deal with every single day. And I like to make sure that I can address those issues, which is why I've gotten in really good with my good friend with SEDOT, Tony Magwood, with fixing a lot of these potholes in these roads. A lot of times they just want to make sure that they can get back and forth to work and home safely. Infrastructure and development has been a big issue in my area.
And do you think that translates to the biggest issue statewide, or do you think that there's something else that you would focus on?
I think it does. I had a meeting with the municipalities as well as the association of the counties, and we talked specifically about this issue where cities are annexing parts of the rural communities, and these rural communities, they don't want to be a part of the cities. They don't want to be a part of these issues. So we've had meetings, myself and Representative Chris Wooten, with these organizations to talk about these issues. What's the communication problem? What's the breakdown that's going on? And my community, you know, they really do appreciate me trying to assist with this. See, a lot of these things, they come down to local issues. It comes down to city council or county council. But the fact that they have a state representative that's willing to speak out for them on behalf of those local issues, they really appreciate it. I show up at all the community meetings about these developments, and I talk to all of them about these things, even though it's not essentially my jurisdiction. The fact is, I live in this community also. It affects me as well. And that's one of the things that I'm hearing all over the state.
Some of the other individuals that we've had on the podcast have talked about, even when you get things moving at the local level, there's still a lack of contractors or experienced labor to be able to move things forward, and people aren't bidding on them. Do you find that happening in your district as well?
I don't find that happening. There's no shortage of individuals trying to make money, you know, and they are all up and down through here building and talking to people. I like to make people understand that I'm not against development, but I'm for smart development, sustainable development, the type of development that grows with the community, that the community wants to see in their areas, not just a random gas station on a random street somewhere, or just cookie cutter houses placed in a neighborhood of $500,000, $600,000 homes. I'm for smart development that fits with the community in which is going to be planned to sit in.
So you have had a first day in office before, but you are running unopposed and you have your first day and magic wand. You get to change any policy. What is that policy and why?
I would probably say it would be with gun legislation. And I let people know that I am a pro-Second Amendment person. But there are certain parts of this legislation that does not sit right with me. Previously, before we just passed the constitutional carry, there was no law in the state that said, hey, if your gun is stolen, that you actually have to report your gun stolen. In this state, we also don't have a negligent storage law. So we have kids who are out here who are stealing guns, shooting each other with them. People are not reporting them stolen. And then once the police find out that the gun is stolen, there's no criminal penalty for somebody just leaving their gun somewhere for somebody to get it and kill somebody with. And I think that most responsible gun owners would agree with what I'm saying here, because we're not about taking guns away. We're not about infringing on your Second Amendment rights, but we want people to be responsible. We know criminals are not responsible. The bad guys, they're going to get their guns. They're going to make their guns with all this new technology that we have. They're going to do what they want to do. So I would talk about a negligent storage law. I would talk about actually saying, hey, you need to report your gun stolen if it's stolen. And I would talk about making sure that we're closing the Charleston loophole and making sure that straw man sales are going to be really penalized, and to make sure we're protecting as many people as possible.
Let's switch a little bit and move over to the economy. South Carolina's done a relatively good job of attracting manufacturing. We have BMW and Volvo and you name it, they're coming here. But do you think that we're attracting gray and white collar jobs in addition to manufacturing?
I think we are headed in that direction. I think in the past we have pretty much hung our hat on the manufacturing jobs, manufacturing companies, and that type of stuff. But we have some initiatives that are going on, specifically in Columbia here with the GrowCo organization that's doing artificial intelligence, computer programming, that type of stuff, and trying to build out some things. This technology hub that we have downtown right now. And I actually allocated some money to the town of Eastover to create a tech academy down here to teach individuals this type of no coding and low coding technologies so that we can build this type of things in rural communities as well. So I believe that we're headed in the right direction. I don't think we're investing nearly enough in that type of space. because it's inevitable that we are going to head into the artificial intelligence future, and we've got to get ahead of this curve.
So interesting that you bring that up, because we had one candidate, I think in the upstate, that is an AI sort of specialist, and that's what they do for their day job. And they were intent on South Carolina becoming the leader in AI on the East Coast. And so you're the second person to bring that up. Would you mind defining what no code and low code means for those of us who are maybe less technologically adept?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if anybody on here is familiar with how websites are made, like in terms of WordPress and all those different things like that, a lot of times to build a website in the past, you would have to know the HTML coding. You'd have to know all the, how to type in all those extra characters and do all those things to create something visual. Now, low coding and no coding, it's literally just drag and drop. So if I see a picture that I like, I drag it and I put it in this box and I move it around this area. You can go and you can, with ChatGPT and those things, you can just talk to it and say, hey, listen, create me a website that says this and put the image there. And then it will give you access to it to where if you can drag and drop to make edits to it. It's a simple process of building apps and building websites and building businesses just based on dragging and dropping certain pictures, text, anything like that, makes it simple to where anybody can really do it. So we're trying to teach people in these rural areas to be able to build these types of apps or businesses or websites so they can create their own businesses and do their own online things, because we are investing in broadband now. I believe a majority of my district should have access to broadband at this point. I've been working with the co-ops down here to do that. And having this type of technology allows people in these rural areas to really take advantage of these opportunities.
We are going to move into a lightning round. It's where you stand on some of these hot button issues. And it's on a 1 to 10 scale. 1 is if you completely disagree, and 10 is if you fully agree based on the topic. So where do you stand on the legalization of marijuana?
So recreational, I'm about an 8. Medicinal, I'm a 10.
You want to give any context?
If I don't want to have to deal with the secondhand smoke part of it, how is the recreation going to affect that? There's got to be some parameters around it. So that's why I'm at an 8. But for medicinal, I'm at a 10 out of 10 every time, all day, every day, because a lot of people who have PTSD, my brother was in Desert Storm, my father was in Vietnam, and individuals who have suffered from PTSD in these situations, I think that we should be able to give them what they need to cope with the issues that they have, specifically my military veterans. I have a soft spot in my heart for my military veterans because of all the stories and the things that I've heard from my own family members about what they've had to endure. And I feel like if they are willing to risk their lives so that you and I can have this conversation right here on this podcast, they should be given whatever it is that they need to feel comfortable, because they literally laid their lives just for you and I's personal liberties.
So what about the heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban?
I'm a 1 with that, because first off, I think that women are smart enough to make their own decisions. I think women are smart enough to know when something is healthcare and when something is not. I think women can do whatever it is they need to do. I actually introduced legislation that would create a women's healthcare committee where it would have women from the Democratic caucus as well as women from the Republican caucus, and they would come up with whatever it is they think would be necessary for their own bodies in terms of this type of situation, and then they would produce their findings to the full body, and then we would discuss it there and vote on that. But I think that if there's a situation, a health situation or something like that, where somebody could literally die from giving birth, there's no reason for my opinion to be weighed more than theirs. You know, until I can actually die from giving birth, my opinion should not be the defining factor in some legislation.
All right. School vouchers for all.
I'm a 5, specifically because I know where it can help, but I also know where it can hurt, because we are not holding private schools to the same standards as our public institutions. And private schools can essentially recruit or handpick who they want from our public institutions and then leave whoever they want. They're allowed to still discriminate, essentially. It's like if your kid wants to go to a private school and my kid wants to go to this private school, that school can say, no, we don't want your kid, Jermaine, but we'll take Caitlin's kid. But my tax dollars are literally going towards paying for your kids to go to school. So I'm not for that.
What about open carry?
Open carry, as long as you have done your training, got your CWP and all of that, I'm like, whatever you want to do. But I am not for an individual walking around with no training, being able to carry a gun any way he wants to carry it, and not even know exactly what he's doing. Because these kids, they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're walking around with guns and they have no type of training whatsoever other than what they've seen on TV.
Your sheriff in Richland County completely agrees with you as well.
I love Leon Liza. He's a good friend of mine.
What about the recent transgender care ban for minors?
I don't want young people to be put in a situation where they have to make a decision in whether their life even matters. I believe that if we truly believe that parents know best for their kids, I think parents should know best for their kids' health. And I think that should be between the families and the doctors, and that the government needs to get out of these doctor's offices of these families. So I think we are overstepping on this thing. People are taking these little headlines and running with it. I've talked to many of the parents, many of the families, and they're saying, like, listen, we came to a decision after years and years of counseling and years and years and years of talking to different specialists and different doctors. So I think that the government just needs to mind their business, let families be families, and it'll work itself out.
Critical race theory in schools.
I fought against this thing. They say it's because they don't want opinions inside of our education. But the question that I ask is, if I tell the truth, the actual truth of a situation, and it hurts your feelings, is that my fault? That's not my fault that your feelings are hurt based on the fact that your great-grandfather owned my great-grandmother. It's just the truth. And we have to make sure that we are talking about the truth in these situations when we're talking to these individuals. I spoke out about this at the well in the General Assembly one day saying, hey, well, what are you going to do when my children tell your children the truth? Are you going to fight my kids because my child knows the truth? We just passed a bill the other day for Robert Scott Smalls to get a statue on the State House grounds. A lot of people didn't even know who Robert Scott Smalls was. A lot of people don't even know who Sarah Mae Fleming is. Sarah Mae Fleming was the first Rosa Parks out of Eastover, South Carolina. This history is not even taught in our schools. Why is that not taught in our schools? All these things are considered CRT. It is a shame. I saw some stuff where they were saying Martin Luther King and the March on Washington was considered CRT. That's not CRT. That's just history. And we can't let people twist history to say whatever they want to say.
Social emotional learning in schools.
I have not really taken a position either way.
How about term limits for state house and state senate?
Oh, man. I am for that. I'm about to eight on that one. I'm a two-time award winner for signing the term limit pledge for congressional members. I don't think anybody should be in that house 30, 40, 50 years up there doing this type of thing. This is the people's seat. And I think we need to make sure that the people feel like they can actually attain some of these positions, because sometimes you get up there, you get out of touch with your community. You lose touch with the common person. And one of my examples is the person who I ran against was literally 50 years older than me. And when I ran against this individual, I had to think to myself, well, what did this 80 plus year old individual have in common with my 7-year-old daughter? He really couldn't inspire her about a future because, quite frankly, he wasn't going to be a part of that future. That's what I do as much as I can to be involved with young people so they can know that they can be me, because I'm still relatively young. They can attain what I've attained. So I absolutely think that we should have some sort of term limits. Not sure what that number is, but I do believe we need to have some sort of term limits.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives.
I think that we have got to have that. And I've made this point many times before. They literally wrote a bill to pass this banning situation. This bill that was written up didn't include any Black people to write the thing. And I'm telling them, I say, hey, listen, like, you're writing this stuff up and you got this stuff in here. There's no definition for what DEI even is. And they had things on there where they were saying, I don't know. And I'm like, you're scared of something that you have no idea what it even is. We have these beautiful programs that are going on at Clemson. There's a Men of Color Summit that happens at Clemson. There is a Call Me Mister program down at the College of Charleston. And then the MLK office at University of South Carolina. And in these programs, they're specifically talking about, hey, we want to do things to get more Black men to be teachers because we know we need more teachers. But under this DEI bill, it would essentially say that these schools can't even advertise to even try to attract more men of color to be teachers. So I think that we are taking a step too far saying that this is racist stuff when it's really not.
Do you support the way that we currently choose judges on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
I'm about a 3 in. The question I always ask people is, when is the last time you were able to interview your boss up here? If you're a lawyer legislator, essentially you go in front of these judges. That's my problem with it, is that even though I'm not going to say that anybody's doing anything unethical or anything like that, but to be able to operate the way that we do it, you have to assume that the judge and the lawyer legislator has the utmost ethical standards among anybody that's walking around us. I think human nature sometimes takes over. And I think we need to go ahead and put some plans in place to lessen that blow.
When you have your voters listening to this, what do you hope they take away from this conversation?
I hope my constituents take away is that I don't care if you're a Republican or if you're a Democrat, if you're Black, white, if you're gay or you're straight, I'm going to represent you. You've heard that I've got some very controversial opinions that some Democrats will say, man, you're not a Democrat if you believe that way. Or some Republicans will say, man, you're very liberal. I'm strictly in the middle. I'm a middle guy. I'm for what's right and against what's wrong. And I'm always going to stand up for the truth and what we need to do. I won't reach across the aisle. I walk across the aisle and I will grab a hand and I will meet them in the middle. And we will discuss these things. I spent a lot of time not just hanging out with Democrats. I spent majority of my time hanging out with my Republican colleagues because I don't believe that there's a point for me to sit around a bunch of people who are like bobbleheads saying yes all day and agreeing with everything that I say. I want to sit across the aisle with some people who are shaking their head no. So that I can figure out, well, why are you saying no? Tell me your perspective on this, and let's see if we can come to some common ground.
Jermaine, thank you so much for taking time and talking to us here at Frogmore Stew. This is Caitlin, and I'm here today talking with Colin Holloway, who is running for State House of Representatives District 102 in Berkeley County. How are things going?
Well, I'm better this time around. This is my second time running for the same seat, actually. More people recognize me now, so I'm really busy this time.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. What have you done to make you feel like you're prepared to be a state legislator?
I've always had an interest in politics, so I've always studied this kind of thing. I've come from a working class background. My family's all working class. I've been to college. I've worked jobs like at fast food restaurants and stuff. I've talked to the average voter. I've lived with them, worked with them, talked to them about that kind of stuff. So I feel like I have a lot of the same experiences and I know how they feel and what they want.
And you are running as a Democrat against Joseph Jefferson, who's also a Democrat and has been there since 2004. Can you talk about what inspired you to primary the incumbent?
It had less to do with him, actually. It's just, I felt like I needed to help. Like, I want to be a public servant. And I really do like Joe Jefferson, but I feel that I could go further than he has. I have policies I believe in that I haven't heard him talk about necessarily, and I just believe in my vision.
Talk to me then about specifically, what is your district's biggest issue?
I feel like it's the same issues that would affect a lot of places in the state, and I feel like one of the biggest ones, as I said, we have a big housing problem. Everyone I talk to, they talk about how expensive housing is, how they can't afford rent, all that stuff. So I feel like there's a big problem with the way the housing market is set up. And if we had a public housing option that is basically free at the point of service that people can live at, where they don't have to worry about a large portion of their rent being taken out of their paycheck, then they would be able to save up money and afford a better housing eventually when they're not paycheck to paycheck.
And do you think that's the biggest issue statewide as well? Or do you think there's another issue you would want to address statewide once you're in the legislature?
Another really big one that is also statewide is our problems with our schools right now. We have a big shortage of teachers and it's become a political battleground where outside groups are trying to influence what happens in schools just because of their own political motivations, when we should be more focused on making sure kids get the best education they can.
What does that look like for you, the best education?
I think a big thing we should do is listen to teachers and what they need, which the number one thing I've heard them say is they need a pay increase. I feel like that there needs to be better protections for teachers when it comes to them making curriculums so that we don't have to worry about outside groups trying to get books banned or get certain topics banned from schools and stuff like that.
So then if you had a magic wand and you show up day one, what is one policy that you would change immediately?
I'd probably say my housing policy I mentioned before, but if I have to go with something else, I think I would want to add a universal healthcare option for the state so that people have a single payer option where their healthcare is paid for by taxes and they don't have to worry about large bills from insurance companies and expensive payments constantly and whether their coverage is going to get denied because some company wants to save a few bucks.
Because you're in Berkeley County, Berkeley, Dorchester, there's been a huge influx of manufacturing jobs with the companies that are based there. How important do you think it is to attract companies that also provide gray and white collar jobs in addition to the manufacturing jobs that South Carolina has brought into the state?
I think it's vitally important for our economy. I don't think anyone could really deny that. We should always try to encourage this the growth of those types of jobs in our state. I think the real issue is, though, is we need to make sure we also protect ourselves from the downsides, all the pollution that those types of jobs bring. We need to bring those jobs in, and we need to make sure that they're properly regulated to keep our people safe and healthy at the same time.
What is your main priority around infrastructure and infrastructure development?
One issue I've noticed is when we develop new areas, like we build a new factory or whatever, we tend to just clear out the wetlands in the area where all the water would normally drain, which causes a lot of flooding in the cities and neighborhoods every time there's a big rainstorm, especially during hurricanes. Our infrastructure needs to be more focused on making sure that there's still these natural wetlands around to contain all the rainwater and make sure that we're not destroying our cities in the long run just to be able to put up a new factory without a plan. Maybe like a slower growth over a long period of time that's sustainable rather than just huge jump in manufacturing that we then have a crash after that. I want to avoid that crash. I want to make sure that we stay profitable and we stay a prosperous state.
Let's move into the lightning round. We're going to go with 1 to 10. 1 is totally disagree, and 10 is fully agree. We will start with the heartbeat and 6-week abortion ban.
I don't think that the state should be able to get in between someone's doctor and their health care. I don't think we should be taking away women's rights like that, especially with these 6-week bans. They're really shady because they're trying to make it look nicer than it is. That's before people even know they're pregnant. It's a default, complete, total ban.
School vouchers for all.
3 or 4 for that.
How about open carry?
Maybe like a 2.
Transgender care ban for minors?
1.
Social emotional learning in schools?
That's maybe like an 8, maybe a 10.
Term limits for state house and state senate?
I'd give that a 7.
What about the concept of diversity, equity, and inclusion?
I'll say 7.
How our judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
Maybe a 3. I think it should probably be like an elected office rather than being selected by a committee.
And what about lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
I'll give it a 5 for now because I have mixed feelings on that. People other than lawyers should also have a say in who's in charge of it and who the judges will be. But at the same time, having them as experts is also important too.
So, Colin, last question. What do you want the average voter to know about you walking away from this interview?
I want them to know about my platform, really. The types of things I've talked about today. The fact that I have the same kind of working class background as a lot of people in the state. And that I'm going to represent them. And I'm also 26 years old, and there's a large demand for younger politicians taking office, younger people getting more involved in the political system.
We are so grateful that you chose to spend some time with us today on Frogmore Stew.
Thank you for having me.
Wayne Borders, welcome to Frogmore Stew. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You have decided to put yourself up as a candidate for the State House of Representatives District 89. Can you tell me what district that is that you represent?
District 89 comprises the western side of the Congaree River, where the area across from Gervais, the Jarvis Clapman Bridge and the Blossom Street Bridge, the town of Springdale, the town of West Columbia, and the city of West Columbia.
You have been very active in your community for quite some time. What do you feel like you've done to prepare to be a member of the state legislature?
Even since a young age, I've been a political observer and very interested in the civic process. Mm-hmm. It was only in high school that I started to really think hard about exactly how we make change and really institutionalize that. It was actually federal Congress that seemed the most accessible because that's the one we hear about on the news a lot. But throughout my organizing work since coming back to South Carolina, it's our state legislature that has much power and the ability to really make those institutionalized changes in our state. I have been one of those people who would encourage other people to run because I understand how important it is that we have not only just new ideas, but people really willing to do the work of moving a project forward. And at a certain point, I don't want to be a hypocrite or not be that person to motivate somebody else by letting them see the examples. I decided that now was the time. And the district where I live is one that is certainly in need of change. And I decided to sign up and run.
Tell me then, in your district, what do you think the biggest issue is?
I think one of the issues we have is going to be our growth as more people are coming to South Carolina. Sure, they're moving to the coast, but you also have people moving into Columbia, which means people will naturally spread to this west side of the river. Over the course of the time that I've lived here, I've seen new construction happening in Casey. I recall the building of Black Rooster and the changing of the park that was behind it. I love it. I love seeing new businesses come into the area. And how do we help areas like West Columbia continue to grow, but also be ready for the people who come to live here? That's going to be one big issue. I know road safety, of course, is going to be major as we continue to have the expansion and road work continuing on Malfunction Junction, just up when three highways come together. That is the 126 going in and out of Columbia, mm-hmm. Interstate 26 and Interstate 20.
Do you think growth and infrastructure is the same issue statewide, or do you think there's another issue that's the biggest issue for South Carolina statewide?
Infrastructure is definitely an issue statewide. And I'm not saying this because I'm biased working with Palmetto State Abortion Fund, but it's quite frankly because this is a national problem we have. The 6-week abortion ban, it's mm-hmm. unnecessary. It causes more problems. And we just don't need it. Quite frankly, we need more doctors. We need hospitals opening. We need the expansion of Medicaid, which is not just federal money to do stuff for us. No, that's taxes that we have already paid. That is our money that we deserve for our citizens to get the healthcare they need. Those would certainly be, in my opinion, the biggest issues right now in our state.
Then if you had a magic wand, what is one policy you think you'd change instantaneously?
Oh, we'd immediately have to get rid of the abortion ban. Even if it meant just going back to the 22-week standard we used to have, that's fine. I would prefer something even more broad. And if that's something I could institute, I would. That way, people who even find themselves in third trimester situations and needing that care can get it, because it's extremely expensive. At that point, it's already a hard decision before that late in a pregnancy. That's not a time when government needs to be showing up in a doctor's office saying, excuse me, here's some information you have to say that may not be true. Or, I'm sorry, this whole discussion you two are having, you can't have, you, the patient, you have to go three states over.
And my question to you is, you're running as a Democrat and mm-hmm. the incumbent ran unopposed mm-hmm. as a Republican for your district. Clearly, there's a supermajority currently. How do you feel yes. if you won that you would work with the opposite side of the aisle to move the needle on this?
I would have to do my best to find a working relationship with someone on the other side to begin that process of reassessing what now will be this prior legislative session has mm-hmm. done. That's going to be a part of the reality of the situation, is joining into a minority party, just having to build those relationships to somehow try to find some way forward. If that's not possible, and I know it would be a hard fight to even have, mm-hmm. perhaps drafting a statewide ballot initiative, instituting actual democracy, and letting the people decide what we as a state will choose to allow as far as how far forward or whatever restrictions.
Currently, it is not legal mm-hmm. to do a statewide ballot, working towards passing legislation where...
So that's one of the things that I really delved into, especially when I was working on the marijuana issue when I was president of Columbia Normal. Our statewide ballot initiative and referendum process, yes, there is no way for a citizen to begin that process. It's not like you can collect a bunch of petitions and you present it to a state agency or the state general assembly, and then they have to move forward on it. In our state, it has to be done either at the county or the state level. If it's done at the state level, then it must be introduced by either, I believe, a senator or a member of the state house. Mm-hmm. And it has to be passed by 2/3 majority. That's a hard road to go. But if that's what I need to do to get people on the record for their constituents to see, then that might be a road we have to take. Because if the people of South Carolina are upset about this, as I've heard and experienced just in just doing the work that I do, going to events and just having conversations that I have, I have a feeling that if people in this district feel the same way as the general populace, then I will have to do something as a legislator to ensure that we right what I think was a wrong done to the women of this state.
All right. What do you want the average voter to know about you? When you're out knocking on doors, having conversations, what do you hope people take away from your conversations with them?
I really want people to take away that government does work. And as a representative, as someone who wants to be their public servant, that I do work for them, that they can just contact me with their issue. And if there's something I can do about it, that's what I should be there to do. One of the things that stuck with me was a story that my brother told. He, at one point, did work at the State House, and someone had called, and this man had an issue, but he said he didn't want to feel like a burden, or he wasn't asking for anything, but he needed help. He's a Republican. He just doesn't want, you know, he's not asking the government for anything. And when my brother told me this, we just looked at each other and then had the brief discussion about, why should you feel sad? Why should you feel shame calling your representative, calling your state government to do for you? That's what it's here for, to work for you. And in all this time of one party control over the last few decades, how is it that people still feel ashamed of their government? It must not be working for them. And so what I want people to take away when I talk to them is that I'm serious about you participating in the process, because by participating, by electing someone, you have chosen the person that you believe will work best for you. And I'm already coming to you face to face and asking for your vote, because I want to be your best employee. Let me be your best representative.
We're going to close this out today with a lightning round. The point is to get your stance on some of these hot button issues that we're going to clearly be talking about from now until November. It's a scale from 1 to 10. 1 is that you totally disagree, and 10 is that you fully agree with the current legislation that we have. All right. Heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
We're going to go with a 1.
How about school vouchers for all?
Probably more 2.
And how about open carry?
That might be a 3.
Transgender care banned for minors?
That is a 2. That's like a 1. Might even be okay. A 0.
Okay. Critical race theory in schools.
I would support having critical race theories in school, and I would do probably at the level of an 8.
Social emotional learning in schools.
I would say 7 on that.
Term limits for state house and state senate.
I would say 3. There's some discussion to be had in there about why term limits are absolutely horrible and would do far more damage than good.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
I'd say 8.
Okay. How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee?
I would probably put that as a 4, because we have a situation with our General Assembly with a lot of lawyers who are choosing judges who they will come before. Even the way that, in part, how the heartbeat bill got done, you know, someone had to resign because of her age requirement. Then we just elect a new guy, and suddenly the 6-week ban is okay.
And one last one, lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I'm going to go with a 5 on that, because those are people who have experience that could be useful.
You're open to conversation.
Very much so.
Wayne, we are grateful that you chose to spend a little bit of your time with us, and look forward to seeing the outcome in November.
I appreciate you again for reaching out and having me on the show. And I, too, am looking forward to a great race.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.